The world seems so unstable, so insecure. Everything is changing way too fast. But there are some things that are steadfast, things that never change: God and His Word. Join us as Pastor Randy Rehm shares truths from God's unchanging Word.
We are continuing in John chapter 11. So let me give it context before you stand. Let me make sure I give the context. Jesus had challenged the religious leaders. If they can't believe what Jesus says, then believe the Father's works that He does. The work He goes and does is raises a dead guy, Lazarus, from the grave. Now, the evidence, sort of undeniable, unmistakable. Only God has the power to give life. Earlier, Jesus had came to be the bread of life, that He gives life to whom He wishes, and so on. The only conclusion you can come up with is Jesus is who He said He was. He had done a bunch of other miracles, most recently in our study, the lame man at the pool. Remember that? He did it on the Sabbath. He fed thousands by actually creating food on the spot. He walked on water. And He made eyes for a guy that was born blind. But this miracle demanded a different kind of response. So today, as we began in verse 45, we start looking at the response of those people in that region in particular, their response to this seventh and final in the Gospel of John, final public sign that Jesus gives. So if you'd please stand, John chapter 11, verse 45 through 54. Now many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and seen what He, that is Jesus, did, believed in Him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. So the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered together the council and said, "What are we to do? For this man performs many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone would believe in him, and you sure can't do that. And the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation." But one of them, that is one of the council, Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing at all, nor do you understand that it is better for you that one man should die for the people, not that the whole nation should perish." Now he said this. Now he did not say this of his own accord, but being the high priest, he prophesied that Jesus was going to die for the nation, not for the nation only, but also to gather into one the children of God who are scattered abroad. So from that day on, they, that is the council, together planned to kill Jesus. And Jesus, therefore, no longer walked openly among the Jews, but went from there to the region of the wilderness, to a town called Ephraim, and there He stayed with the disciples. You may be seated. So now we watch the response of this absolutely amazing miracle. Now, I didn't talk about this last week, but I wanted you to picture it in your head. Remember, Lazarus was bound from his head to his feet. How'd he get out of the tomb? He didn't walk. Once he got out, Jesus says, "You guys need to unbind him." I don't know if he levitated, floated. I don't know how, but here's a guy bound, it can't walk, out of the tomb. Imagine the people that were, okay, I'll take the grave clothes off, wondering what they're going to see underneath. Now, the Scripture gives us nothing about, I'd have 50 questions for Lazarus. Where have you been? What was it like? Should write a book and go on tour to heaven and back. You know what I mean? It doesn't talk about anything like that. Doesn't talk about Mary and Martha greeting their brother, because that is not the point. The point is that Jesus Himself says, "You will see the glory of God." God is being glorified here in the Son, and therefore the Son being God is glorified, because he also said he'll glorify himself. Okay, that's the point. Of course, this group misses the point. Therefore, many of the Jews, that is those, remember, they're in Bethany, which just is a couple miles outside of Jerusalem. If you go across the Kidron Valley, around the Mount of Olives, it's on the other side of up 2 miles, that these mourners had come, friends had come, and they were there. Now, many of these people there, that's the they, who came with Christ, saw what he had done and believed in him. Again, how could you not? The disciples, they were in the boat. They saw the walking on water, it is all, you know. But not everybody. There were the people who saw the feeding. But there could be sleight of hand in feeding 5,000. You know, there could have been some trickery there. You know what I'm saying? Maybe the guy born blind, like the Pharisees tried to prove, he really wasn't blind anyway. The lame man was faking it. But when the dead guy gets out of the grave, that's a little rough to explain. But this actually fulfills what Jesus said in 42, I do this that they might believe. He actually says, I say, you heard me when I said that this is an unto death, but I say this for them here so that they will believe. Now apparently, among these, many of them continued to believe. We find that out in the next chapter. Compared to some we saw in chapter 6, some in chapter 8, that they believed until Jesus got really tough on the teaching. And then they left. But these particular ones, some of them, it actually says, some of them that were there saw Lazarus raised, continued to believe. And you've got to realize what's happening in chapter 12. It's the last week of Jesus' life. So we're not too far from there as this story sort of ends and wraps up. But some of them, two groups, some believe, and we can see they continue to believe. Others are tattletales, stool pigeons, whatever term you want to use for that. And nobody likes a tattletale. I'm sorry. You know, even in the movies, right? The guy, it betrays his own side. Even the guy he betrays him to don't like him because nobody likes that kind of person. So these people, they first thing they do instead of believing, rejoicing, is they run off to tell the religious leaders, which they know are the enemies of Christ. What's their motive in doing that? What's your motive for going and saying, do you know what, let me tell you what Jesus did. You won't believe what he's doing now. You're right, you won't believe. Now, you got to understand, in Israel, and I think most of you know this, the Pharisees and those who formed what's called the Sanhedrin, that word here, it says when they gathered the council together, that council, that's where we get the word Sanhedrin. And we get them from synagogue, even flows out of that general word. They were the ones with the political power. So imagine this, you're wanting to start a new aviary, a bird business, and you need a permit. I know we don't think, they didn't need, yeah, you had to get permission. In those days as well. So you would have to go through to the governmental authorities. That would be these people. So it could be that. It could be you were looking for a promotion. It looked like you want to be invited to the best parties. So if you really impress these people, it makes me good in the community in one way or another. That's my suggestion. Or people just hated Jesus. And that just couldn't be the case, could it? I mean, how could you hate someone that heals sick people, feeds hungry people, and raises dead people? Nobody would hate that kind of person, right? So their response, we need to have a meeting. That's the response to this. We got to convene a special session of the Sanhedrin. What are we going to do? What do you mean, what are you going to do? He raised a dead guy. What is there for you to do? For this man is performing many signs. Even those who hated Jesus did not deny the fact that he did miracles. There are many today, that miracles, that's just myth. That's funny. The people that were living at the time that were his enemies said he did them. They've tried to prove them fake, and they can't. But this one, they're stuck. You can't fake this one. Remember previously, and I think you know this, but I want to remind you of it. Previously, these same fellows called Jesus a sinner, that's in John 9, said he was insane and possessed by a demon. They actually said that twice. That he was a Samaritan, and you know, for us, that would be like saying you're Putin or something today. I'm not sure what would equate to that. And they actually, in Luke, they call him a glutton and a drunkard. They're not Jesus' friend. Previously, in chapter 8, they wanted to kill him for making himself equal with God. In chapter 7, people are trying to declare is he the Messiah or not? So they tried to arrest him, but he sort of disappears through the crowd. They pick up stones to stone him in chapter 8. Now, these are spontaneous responses. They pick up stones to stone him because he says, before Abraham was, I am. And then in chapter 10, when he says, I am the Father one, they pick up stones. But now, this isn't reactive in that sense. Now they want to make it official. We're going to call a meeting of Congress, if I can use it in our terms, or Parliament, depends on what part of the world you're in. All right, we're going to make an official response now. It's going to be legislative, if I could use that term. This isn't just, we get stoned. We know we should have him arrested. No, this now, they meet as a legal body to put out a warrant, if I could say it like that. A grand jury, maybe in our culture to begin with, that issues the summons. If we let him go on like this, like you could stop him? I mean, how do you stop a guy that raises dead people? Kill his friends? He could just bring them back, right? Think about it. If we let him go on like this is a bad thing. Healing people, feeding people, telling them that the kingdom's at hand, is near. What they wanted to stop is, no one comes through the Father but through me. I am the way, the truth, and the life. They really had a bigger problem with what he said than what he did. What he did, though, was moving people to believe in what he said, and that was their problem. And we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. There's many people today have no problem saying Jesus was a good guy, did good things and all that. They just have a problem with him being so exclusive. Then it says, all men will believe in him. That is hyperbole, by the way. But in this case, political hyperbole. We never seen that. Anybody seen any commercials recently? Because obviously the informants that came and told them weren't believing. They know those people aren't believing. They're the tattletales. But that, you know, next everybody's going to catch it. Oh, did I say that? Oh, yeah, I should have said that. There's no specific charge here, though. There's no charge of blasphemy or breaking the Sabbath or whatever. They just say people will believe in him. Apparently that's a crime to these fellows. So they create, listen to this, and you'll see it even later in Caiaphas' statement, they create the doomsday scenario. Modern terms, the zombie apocalypse. You better stash your food. You know, get off the grid. I'm not saying you should or should. Don't do that. But what I'm saying is, like today, when you watch the news, this word is so overused. Crisis. It's this crisis. It's that crisis. It's economic crisis, immigration crisis. Pick your crisis. Educational crisis, whatever it is. It's a crisis. So these guys are political leaders more than they are. Matter of fact, they're really not religious leaders at all. They are by name only. And they want to look at, man, if we keep doing this, you know. There was a speech recently by our current president talking about the previous administration and those. They're going to ruin America. You know, if we let these people get in office, the American will just be destroyed. We'll lose all of our liberties, et cetera, and so on. And to be honest, you can get that kind of rhetoric on either side, right? And they said it when Obama was becoming president, the right was saying the same thing. All right. So, but there is that political bit to it. But you know, I find it's interesting. It's the same thing they said to Pilate when Jesus was on trial before Pilate. If you release this man, you are no friend of Caesar's. Doesn't say anything about God. Look, we're on Caesar's side. And if you don't, you're against our way, our life, our government. You're against it. If you let Jesus go. They were more afraid, at least this is what he's projecting, as you'll see here. The Romans will come if we let him go. All will believe in him. The Romans will come and take both our place and our nation. Notice which is first. Now, to us, so what? But you don't understand, in Hebrew, what you put first is the big important thing. Their position was the most important thing. If he upsets the apple cart, let's just assume for the sake of argument that the argument they're making, that he is going to bring up a rebellion against Rome, and they're going to be free from Rome. Why wouldn't they want that? Because the messianic kingdom that they see from the Old Testament, that you and I might think of more as the millennial reign, there aren't any of those positions. Even if we're ruled by pagan, evil, wicked people, as long as I get mine. You know, I'll vote for the party, whichever one you might think that is, immoral, promoting sin, but the other side, who wants to stop that side, they won't give me a big social security check, so I'll vote for this side. The position I'm in, I don't mess with where I'm at. Don't mess with my stuff. Don't mess with... That's sort of American thing, folks. And it can be taken wrong as well. Anyhow, they forgot that the crowd already wanted to make Jesus king once already. Again, back in chapter 6, and Jesus would have, they were going to force him and crown him king, and he disappears. Somehow gets through the crowd, they don't know where he went. Well, if he was wanting himself to be king, now, wait a minute, next week you have triumphant entry here coming up, so, well, anyway. But they forgot that. All they cared is the system that they had their power in, their wealth in, that nobody messed with that system. And they were more afraid of what the human system, Rome, could do to them and their position than they ever thought about, what if this guy is God? What if this guy that raises dead, walks on water, makes food, heals, what if he's right? They weren't afraid of that at all. They were more afraid of some human institution that might threaten what they think is their well-being. I find it interesting enough that the great Jewish revolt, which starts in 66 AD, happens anyway, without Jesus. And it happens based upon, first of all, because of basically people protesting paying taxes. That's how, on the most simple, basic level, where the great Jewish revolt rises. And it ends when? 70 AD, with the fall of Jerusalem and the destruction of the temple by Titus. So it's interesting what they're afraid of that he'll bring. You kill him, and it still comes. I'll leave that for a minute. Then 49 and 50. But one of them, Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year. Now, some people want to argue, see, he was a high priest for 1 year. We know from historical documents, particularly Josephus' Antiquity of the Jews, his high priestship, if I can say that, hood, lasted 18 years. So it doesn't mean that, matter of fact, earlier he was a shared high priesthood with his father-in-law. By the time Paul comes on, they got another high priest. Between there and the fall in 70 AD, I think they have another 28 different high priests. It becomes pretty revolving after Caiaphas. So what he's trying to say is that year when that event, you all know what we're talking about, he knows his audience, this is the last gospel written. They know about Jesus' death, his resurrection, the whole Passion Week. And that year, in that moment, in that time when this stuff happened, that's when Caiaphas was high priest. And in the NAS, it says this, you know, you guys know nothing. Do you not take into account that this is expedient or profitable or better for you, that one man die for the people and that the whole nation not perish. That this guy die, but the people not. That's what he's saying. Did you guys don't get it? Now, notice he didn't say this. You know, it is just, fair, right, equitable, all those other words we want to use, for this man to die, to save others. No, it's profitable for you. That's the way he's meaning it. It's beneficial to those people sitting on that council. If this guy isn't killed, our country's in danger. If this guy isn't killed, our position's in danger. Killing him is good for the nation. Matter of fact, it's patriotic. I use that term on purpose. A true statement. It is an absolutely true statement, but not in the way Caiaphas thought. Because the next verse tells us this. Now, he did not say this of his own accord. To be more accurate to the Greek, he did not say this of himself. He prophesied, not knowing he was prophesying, that Jesus was going to die for the nation. He had no idea what he was saying. You realize, you can go way back, God used a pagan Persian king to rebuild the temple. That was Cyrus, remember, when he funds Jeremiah, all that, Nehemiah to go back and fill the temple. He uses a false prophet named Balaam to bless Israel when Balaam's being paid to curse Israel. And he goes to open his mouth and he can't. And he even uses Balaam's donkey, as you heard me mention with the kids, to talk to Balaam. If he can make a donkey talk, Caiaphas meant one thing when those words came out of his mouth. It came from his evil, wicked, jealous heart. But God meant them for good. Matter of fact, we get that in Genesis 50. You guys know the story of Joseph. Sell the brother into slavery. Lie to their dad and say he was killed. Later, when they're confronted with all this and Joseph's second command in all of Egypt, you know the story. They're afraid Joseph's going to lop off their heads or something. And Joseph says in Genesis 50, what you meant for evil, God meant for good. Now, does that mean that God made Joseph's brother sell him? No. And we'll talk more about this here as we get to the application. So, it is coming out of Caiaphas's own wicked heart. I'll jump ahead. I got to keep going. What he is declaring is the substitutionary death of Jesus Christ. That he would die for others. For a nation in particular, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his children. Now, this isn't physical salvation. That's what Caiaphas is thinking. We know this is a declaration of substitutionary atonement. It is a spiritual salvation. But he doesn't know that. So he said, not only the Jews, but for all the children of God. Jesus said something similar to this back in chapter 10 when he was talking about the sheep know me, the sheep hear my voice, the sheep follow me. And he says, I have other sheep not of this fold. I must bring them in also. They will listen to me and listen to my voice and we will become one flock under one shepherd. He was talking about the sheepfold of Israel, but there's these other people who are not. And then here's Caiaphas saying, yeah, not just this, but the nation and the John explains, not just the nation of Israel physically, but that nation which is God's children. If he just had grasped what he'd said. Matter of fact, in Acts it tells us if the authorities had understood what they were really doing, they wouldn't have done it. Because they wouldn't, on their own, purposely, promote, move forward, back up God's plan if they knew it was God's plan. They thought they were doing the opposite. So from that day forward, they planned together to kill him. That ain't just disbelief, folks. That's hostile, violent, angry disbelief. And to me, it's got to be a disbelief of choice. It's just, you know, it's just got to be. Yeah, I see the stuff, but I don't care. I care about my position, my authority, and I'm not going to lose these people, so I'm going to just, let's just get rid of him. But then the next verse tells us, though, that Jesus leaves and goes to Ephraim, which is about 12, 13 miles north of Jerusalem. Why? Because it's not yet his time. You can plan all you want, but if it's not God's time, it isn't going to happen. We've ran into this already before, but you'll see it, chapter 12 begins. Oh, it is my time. Let's go back. It's coming up to Passover. 6 days before Passover, let's go back to Jerusalem. They're not in control of the timing of God's plan. Now, God uses them in his plan. Their own evil wickedness he uses for his plan. But the timing ain't going to change. I was raised in a denomination that if the church did X, Y, or Z, that could speed up God's timing for his second coming. Yeah, I'm not going there. Okay, yeah, so he said thank you. So Jesus leaves, and he's going to stay there until right before Passover. Great story. Wonderful story. That's nice. I like the Lazarus raising the dead part better than this part, Pastor Randy. So what's that mean? Well, one thing I want you to understand. When it comes to Jesus, you only have two options. There are only two options. That's it. To believe or not believe. And who he is and who he said he is. That's the only option you got. That's the only two groups of people in the stories. Now, you have those who truly believe, like Mary and Martha, who Martha actually confessed, you are the Son of God, the Messiah who's coming to the world. I mean, that's pretty straightforward. A blind man makes a similar statement in chapter 9. You have the woman at the well, Samaritan woman at the well. And so, and you have all these who saw and believed and continues to. You have that. I think that's a given in the story. But our thing when it comes to unbelief runs a spectrum, if I could say it like that, from being marginally curious, I guess, about Christ and religion and Christianity or whatever, to right out hatred. I mean, that gamut runs across there. We really saw those curious, superficial believers back in chapter 2.
This is Stephen Wilson, and we want to thank you for joining us today, and we hope you were blessed by today's message. Truths from God's Unchanging Word is an outreach ministry of Kindred Bible Church in Caldwell, Idaho. If you would like to listen to other messages by Pastor Randy or learn more about Kindred Bible Church, visit kindredbible.org. Our prayer for you is that you grow closer to Christ as we study the truths from God's Unchanging Word.